ग्रंथ राज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 1 चैप्टर 5 टेक्स्ट नंबर 18 तस्यैव हेतो प्रयतेत कोविदो न लभ्यते यद्भ्रमतामुपर्यथा लभ्यते दुःखवरन्यतः सुखम् कालेन सर्वत्र गभीररामसा तस्य
for that purpose
only
हेतोः reason
प्रयतेत should endeavor
कोविदः
one who is philosophically inclined
not
लभ्यते
is not obtained
yet what भ्रमताम
wandering
उपरि अधः
from top to bottom
that
लभ्यते
can be obtained
दुःखवात्
like the miseries अन्यतः as a result of previous work सुखम्
sense enjoyment
कालेन
in course of time
सर्वत्र
everywhere
गभीरः
subtle
रहस्यः
progress
Persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end which is not obtainable even by wandering from the topmost planet Brahmaloka down to the lowest planet Patala. As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in course of time, just as in course of time we obtain miseries even though we do not desire them. Please repeat.
Persons who are actually intelligent
and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end
which is not obtainable even by wandering from the topmost planet Brahmaloka
down to the lowest planet Patala
As far as happiness
derived from sense enjoyment is concerned,
it can be obtained automatically
in course of time, just as in course of time
we obtain miseries,
even though we do not desire them. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Śrīla Prabhupāda. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Every man, everywhere, is trying to obtain the greatest amount of sense enjoyment by various endeavors. Some men are busy, engaged in trade, industry, economic development, political supremacy, etc. And some of them are engaged in fruitive work to become happy in the next life by attaining higher planets. It is said that on the moon, the inhabitants are fit for greater sense enjoyment by drinking somarasa, and the pitraloka is obtained by good charitable work. So there are various programs for sense enjoyment, either during this life or in the life after death. Some are trying to reach the moon and other planets by some mechanical arrangement, for they are very anxious to get into such planets without doing good work. But it is not to happen. By the law of the Supreme, different places are meant for different grades of living beings according to the work they have performed. By good work only, as prescribed in the scriptures, one can obtain birth in a good family, opulence, good education, and good bodily features. We see also that even in this life, One obtains a good education or money by good work. Similarly, in our next birth, we get such desirable positions only by good work. Otherwise, it would not so happen that two persons born in the same place at the same time are seen differently placed according to previous work. But all such material positions are impermanent. All such material positions are impermanent. The positions in the topmost Brahmaloka and in the lowest Patala are also changeable according to our own work. The philosophically inclined person must not be tempted by such changeable positions. He should try to get into the permanent life of bliss and knowledge, where he will not be forced to come back again to the material, miserable material world, either in this or that planet. Miseries and mixed happiness are two features of material life, and they are obtained in Brahmaloka and in other lokas also. They are obtained in the life of the demigods and also in the life of the dogs and hogs. The miseries and mixed happiness of all living beings are only of different degree and quality, but no one is free from the miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease. Similarly, everyone has his destined happiness also. No one can get more or less of these things simply by personal endeavors. Even if they are obtained, they can be lost again. One should not, therefore, waste time with these flimsy things. One should only endeavor to go back to Godhead. That should be the mission of everyone's life. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshuram Viditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Sukadamikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yadaparagamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Shri Rupam Sakhajatam Sahakan Raghunatham Vitamtam Sajivam Sādvaitam Sādhutam Parijanapahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitam Shri Krishna Karna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namo Tapta Kanchan Gauram Hiyarade Vrindavaneshwari Krishna Anusate Devi Pramani Hikriye Vanchakatrakrutishcha, Prakasindhu Devicha, Pratitanam Pavanekyo, Vaishnavekyo Namo Namah. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tasyaiva Hetoh Prayatet Kovido. Covid. What does COVID mean? Prabhupada said, persons who are one, intelligent, and two, philosophically inclined. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also says, Kovido Viveki. What does Viveki mean?
Who can discriminate between
who can discriminate. Discriminate. So this is the subject of today's verse. Who is COVID? What does COVID literally mean? Anybody know? No. Nope. Ko kaha vid. He knows something. Kaha means something. Vid means he knows. COVID. It's a frozen form now, it's become a noun, COVID, somebody who knows something. So he's educated, as Prabhupada says here, intelligent, and he's also philosophically inclined. That means he's discriminating. He thinks carefully. So this person is the candidate for what we're discussing in today's verse. Sridhar Swami introduces his verse with the idea that if the only result of performing one's swadharma is elevation to the higher planets, like Pitraloka, which Prabhupada mentions here, or Swargaloka. Therefore, he speaks this verse. And Sridhar Swami quotes Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, karma na pitraloke. One goes to Pitraloka by karma. Karma here doesn't just mean, well, what does karma mean? Let's ask. Well, what does karma mean? Karma is one of the easiest words in Sanskrit. Even in English, people know what karma means. So what does it mean?
Activities.
Yes. You sure?
What goes around comes around.
What goes around comes around. Okay. Actually, in this context, karma has a more specific definition. Because although in its broadest sense, karma means activity, but in this particular context, karma really only means what? Dharma. Dharma and karma, if you read Bhagavad Gita, chapters 3 through 5, you will be able to suss out that actually karma means dharma. And if it's not dharma, then what is it? Not karma, but dikarma. And there's really not much question of akarma, but we call it that. You're going to be busy all the time, Krishna says. Sharira yatrati chatena prasiddhena karma. Not doing anything, a person can't even maintain the body. And he says, you cannot even stop acting for a moment. So you're going to be busy with something. You're going to be engaged in activity. What kind of activity? This is the point. Where are you going to go? Are you going to go to Brahmaloka, or are you going down to Patalaloka, or somewhere in between? You have no choice. You have to go to one of these places. So where are you going? COVID means the person has to think about this. And tasyaiva hetoho, for that purpose, it kind of refers back to the previous verse, which we should read. We've been talking about Swadharma, haven't we? This is First Canto, Chapter 5. And he says, Tyaktva Swadharmam Charanambhujam Harir Bhajan Napakvo Atha Tvate Tado Yadi. This is a very common scenario, so we should dilate on this. He says, suppose a person takes to Hari Bhajan, but he's apakva. What does apakva mean? He's not pakka. That's what it means. The word pakka comes from pakva. Not fully cooked. Or not ripe enough, you can say. Immature. So we're all immature devotees, but we're doing bhajan sincerely, and we may have given up our swadharmas in some sense. Generally, we don't give up the swadharmas. Actually, this is an interesting point. In the beginning of chapter 18, Arjuna is curious about something. Does anybody know? What does he ask?
Renunciation and
difference. What is the difference between sannyas and renunciation? And by way of answering that question, Krishna mentions a few very interesting things. He says some people feel that you should give up your swakarma, your swadharma. Other people feel that you should only give up the fruits of your swadharma. It's a subtle distinction, you see. In other words, you're not necessarily giving up the activity itself, but you're giving up the attachment to the fruits that activity is generally aimed at. So what does Krishna say is his final opinion about this question? Anybody know offhand?
You should not disturb. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance should not
disturb. Yes. Yajnyadana tapascheva bhavanani manishinava. The common denominator that we find in all activities that are denoted as dharma, that is sacrifice, charity, austerity. And he says, these things purify even the manishis. Manishi is a synonym you can say for kovids. The people who actually know of something, and those who are educated, they're intelligent, they're discriminating, they're not just blank heads. These are smart people. And so he says, these things should not be given up. because even such people get further purified by these things. But in some cases, we can give up Svadharma when Krishna orders. For example, Arjuna, he gave up his Svadharma, did he?
No.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. Because it's not his dharma to kill his relatives. That's the dharma he gave up. But it is his dharma, Krishna has argued throughout Bhagavad Gita. All the way throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has consistently maintained you have to do this because it is your prescribed duty. And at the end of the day, this is what Arjuna was persuaded to do. You fight. That was his duty. We all have our own duty. That's why they call it swadharma. It's tailored to each individual. But the common characteristic that dharma always has in common is that it is enjoined in the shastra. And in the end of chapter 16, Krishna has told us, how do we know what to do and what not to do? What is the answer? Anybody know? How do you know what to do and what not to do? Yeah, tasmat shastram pramanante karya karya vijanatara. You should understand what is to be done and what is not to be done on the basis of what the shastra says. And here he's quoting the shastra. If you're interested in elevating yourself, say to Pitraloka, or as Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, he quotes the Rig Veda. If you're interested in elevating yourself to the moon planet also, and drinking the nectar there, both of which Prabhupada mentions in his own purport, then you have to perform dharma. And generally this is what people do when they're pious. Nowadays no one is pious, so nobody even cares. They don't even think. They don't even know anymore that this is what civilized human life actually means. Okay, so chaktvasu dharmam charanambhujam hayer bhajan apakpo topate tatoyadi. Let us assume that you have given up your svadharma in an authorized manner for the purpose of devoting yourself to Bhagavan. But because of the maturity, pate, you fall down. Then what happens? This is Arjuna also asks this question in Bhagavad Gita. Who knows the answer what Krishna said? What happens? He said, what happens if I take up this thing, but then I later, what does Krishna say? Yeah, at least you'll go to the higher planets. And that's what the Shastra says. The Shastra doesn't say you'll go higher than that. It says you'll go to Svarga. So at least you'll go there. You will not lose, in other words. This is the beauty of bhakti. That's why we call it punya shravana kirtana. Either way, it's punya. Even if it's not pakva, but it remains punya. So you cannot lose. Throughout Bhagavad Gita, this is also clear. Yatra kva bhadram abhud amushyatyan ko vartha apto bhajatam svadharmataha. Yet there is no danger of his being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duties, does not gain anything. Why? That's being described here. This is Sridhar Swami says. He speaks this verse in order to illumine this point. And Prabhupada emphasizes this in his purport. He says, even if you, no matter where you go, if you go to hell, don't worry, it's only temporary. If you go to heaven, don't worry, it's only temporary. You can't win in this world. Whatever you get attached to is going to be taken away from you. Sure. You will lose it. Jamal Krishna Goswami used to encapsulate this realization very nicely. He said, three things are possible in this world. Only three. One, you don't get what you want because you don't have adequate credit line, so to speak. Two, you get what you want, and then you find out that it actually doesn't satisfy you, because that's the nature of mundane things. They're static. They get boring after a while. Or three, you get what you want because you have that much piety, and you actually like what you get, but you lose it because everything is temporary. So you can't win. One of my favorite quotes is from Sir Winston Churchill. You know what I'm going to say? Those who have heard my lectures enough. If you're going through hell, keep going. But if you're going through heaven, you're going to lose that also. This is the point. So, it's stated here. Yet bhamatamu pariyathaha. Wandering up, wandering down. In either case, nalabhyate. What you want, you cannot have that. The world is designed in such a way as to frustrate your material desires. Therefore, people get smart, like monkeys. Monkeys are very intelligent. In Vrindavan, you see how they think. They're very thoughtful. They're very clever, very practical. They figure out what they have to do to get what they want. So people are like monkeys in Kali Yuga. The intelligence is very monkey-like intelligence. They figure out, I can get what I want without doing piety. This is the bright idea. What they don't realize is that they're running up a big tab, and they have to pay for it. At the end, there's a charsha with Yamaraj after you leave this body. And you have to sit at the table with Yamaraj and all of his assistants, and they're all showing you that, look, you did this, we have it on the, you know, every 10 feet there's a security cam in America now. So Yamaraj is also like this. He's got his agents everywhere. You cannot run. Or you can run, but you can't hide, as they say. So, na labhyate yad brahmatam parithā tal labhyate dukkhavaram yatha sukham. But what do you get? You're going to get temporarily entangling material happiness, and you're also going to get miseries. Anyatha. Even though you're not trying for those things, how do they come? Kalena. Kalena. Who is it? Jiva Goswami says, Kalotra prachina karma bhogavasara. You get the occasion to enjoy or to eat the result. Bhoga means what you eat. You have to eat the result of what you've done in the past. And when did you do it in the past? Prachina. Ancient past. Primeval past. Who knows? No way to tell. This is why Krishna says in chapter 3, the intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Nobody can understand. Well, what really is, where is it? There's a fine line between action, inaction, and karma, akarma, and vikarma. Very, very difficult thing to negotiate. So, but kala, the Buddhists have a nice expression in Sanskrit, kalam karoti. What does kalam karoti mean? Doing time. We're doing time. In English, this idiom means when you're in prison, you're doing time. You have a prison sentence. All of us are incarcerated. Prabhupada often uses this word. What does it mean to be incarcerated? It means you're in prison. You're imprisoned in this mind-body complex for some time, as long as the prarabdha karma is there, and you have to just bide your time, wait for the reactions. You get happiness without even endeavoring for it. You get happiness out of nowhere. Money comes. It happens out of nowhere. And other times you're working very hard, and you can't even break even. So this is the point that is raised by, who is it? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I think it is, he says. No, it's actually Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Well, really, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. In the Chaitanya Bhagavata, in chapter 2, from about text number 40 or so on, he's discussing this point. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is discussing this point. The context is that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to Jagannath Puri with several associates, 6-7 associates, Viradhar Pandit was there, Mukunda Datta was there, some of the sannyasis were there, Brahmananda Bharati and others. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tested his devotees. He asked them, have any of you brought provisions to take on the trip with you? I know, because I travel all the time. We all take something with us. Because you never know what will happen. Especially if you're traveling in India, your plane can be delayed for 6 hours. Hang on. I, Have you experienced it? And they always blame it on Billy somehow or other. But so we take provisions. So he asked his devotees, did you bring any provisions? So they understood and they answered that no, there's no need for this. And somebody mentions the verse there. Bhojanat tadano chintam vritha kurvanti vaishnavaha. The Vaishnavas, they worry in vain how to eat, how to dress themselves, clothe themselves. They don't need, in other words, they don't need to worry about these things. Why? Yosau vishvambharo devaha sakim bhaktan upekshate. Lord Krishna takes care of his devotees. So Mahaprabhu is telling them, yes, you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, well, Sridhar Swami actually in his purport, he also raises a similar point. He says, he's quoting from Brihannaradiya Purana, which is also quoted in the same passage that I just mentioned in Chaitanya Bhagavatam, a fairly well-known verse. Aprarthitani dukkhani. Dukkhani. Miseries that are what? Aprarthita. What does it mean? Aprarthita? You've not prayed for it. Nobody prays for misery, right? So aprarthitani dukkhani yathaivayanti dehyam. All you have to be is a dehi. You have to be embodied, and you're going to get these things. You're going to get aprarthitani dukkhani. So in just that way, he says, sukhani api tatha manye daivam atratirichyate. In exactly the same way, you will get happiness in due course of time. You don't have to endeavor for it. Daivam atratirichyate, because the thing that stands out beyond everything else is what? Daivam. Daivam. What does daivam mean? Fate. Inconceivable, inscrutable fate. Sometimes in the Purva Mimamsa system, this is called adrishta. And some of the acharyas commenting here have mentioned this as well. So, similar point is mentioned in Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 6, text number 3. Anybody know this verse offhand? Prahlad Maharaj?
Sukham
Deha Yogena Dehinam. If you are a Dehi, which means you are a Deha Yogi, you're in touch with the body, then what happens? Exactly the same point. So Sridhar Swami mentioned, he raised the question in that context. Katham tyajyaha? Am I supposed to just give up trying for material happiness? Who knows? What's the answer? Should you make no endeavor at all for material happiness? I see a lot of unsure faces.
This one.
So he says, iti cheta traha sukham. If he speaks this verse in order to address this doubt, he doesn't answer the question. Sarvatra. Sarvatra. Pashu adao api. Even if you're an animal, even if you take birth as a pig, Prabhupada has mentioned the pigs, crusty pigs, you've seen them in India, right? They run up and down the gutter, they get covered with this black water, and then they go and lie in the sun for some time, and then they get all crusty and filthy, filthy creatures. They're eating the most filthy thing. Their habits are the most, even these pigs, they become happy. And the amazing thing, even if you are the king of heaven, Indra, when you take birth as a pig, you're very happy with that situation. Anybody know the story?
Yes.
He took birth as a pig due to a curse. And when the time came for the curse to end, he got so attached to that position, he didn't want to give it up. Brahma had to come and say, hey, listen, you're the king of heaven. What are you doing? Give it up. Let's go. Come on. And Indra said, no, I have my sows here, and I have my little piggies. There's so many of them. Just like us. Hey, think about it. What is the difference? The same sensation on the pig's tongue is the same sensation on a human tongue. Deha yogina dehinam. What do they call? samsparsha. Indriya starsha. The indriya touches the indriya's objects, and then you feel some enjoyment from that. Whether you're a pig or whether you're a human being, it doesn't matter. Or you're a dog or whatever. We have dogs in Vrindavan everywhere. Here you have dogs, but here the dogs, they travel around in the little lady's purse. Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills, it's like every 10 feet you see some high-heeled woman with a little tiny, small, you can't even imagine how the dogs get so small. And it's sitting in the thing, in the woman's purse. There's a joke about this. One poor farmer in Karnataka, he decided not to kill himself like all his friends were doing. So he went to an astrologer instead. And he said, what's going to be my future? I'm worried because, he's worried. But so he saw an astrologer, and the astrologer said, oh, you know what? You're going to take birth in America. Hello, I'm going to take birth in America. But he's very fired up about that because Indians think that the streets are paved with gold over here. And so he was looking forward to that. And then the astrologer's describing, he's looking at the chart and saying, oh, you know what? You're going to live in Beverly Hills. And you're going to have, everybody's going to be taking care of you. You won't have to work. You'll be chauffeured everywhere you go. You'll be fed anything you want. You're going to be very charmed. Like you'll be surrounded by adoring women. Everybody will love you. This is a charmed life. Because you're going to take birth in America as a toy poodle. So even if you're a dog, even if you're a pig, or even if you're Indra, you get the same thing, and it's always temporary. This is the point. So there's really no point. Anyway, this is a long introduction to the verse, but Sridhar Swami, this is his introduction. He says, if the only thing is to get heaven from performing your Swadharma, then what is the big deal? Therefore he speaks this verse. Tasyaga heto. Prayate sa kovido. Nalabhyate tad dhramadam paryatha. Tallabhyate dukhavaranyata sukham. Kalena sarvatra vibhira brahmasa. So, prayate. What does prayate mean? They say I'm bored here.
Endeavoring.
And yeah, one should endeavor. So this is Sridhar Swami says. Yadnam kuryat. That means yadna karna chahiye. You have to endeavor. But you don't have to endeavor to produce the results. So then why are you endeavoring? If your endeavor has nothing to do with the result anyway, then why are you endeavoring?
Duty.
For purification, for duty, they're both correct answers. This is human life. Human life means a discriminating person can see that there is a reason to act in this world. Even though nothing lasts forever in this world, still, there's a reason to act. What do you get? You get auspiciousness. And auspiciousness is very favorable for Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it is not the only reason to perform dharma, to attain svarga-loka. There, otherwise, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni and others within it, they would be in error when they instruct us to follow Varnashram very carefully. So many chapter after chapter in the Bhagavatam, this is given like this. Srila Prabhupada also, I've pointed out many times before, that he gave roughly 80% of his instructions on this topic in the last three years that he was amongst us. Because he saw that these people's lives are so unstable and unpredictable and miserable that you just need to stabilize yourself somehow, and Varnashram Dharma does that. Any kind of Dharma does that. I should be more general. Sadharana Dharma. The problem is that in the West, people have no concept of this word. And there's no word to express it. That's why we find, I counted once, there's at least 24 different definitions are given for this word throughout Srila Prabhupada's books. Two dozen various words are given to define dharma. What does dharma mean? And it means all of them at once. This is the point. That means the concept has, one scholar said about this, the concept has to actually enter the language. Just like we got the idea of karma, I said in the beginning. We have some idea what is karma in the West. Similarly, dharma has to be, it's a concept that has to be introduced, because there's no way to stabilize one's material life without that. And it's a good idea to stabilize your material life. Not only for the purpose of social solidarity, what does Krishna call this in chapter 3? Loka sangraha. That means social harmony, that's one reason, but internal purification, you said. Purification. Sattva samshuddhi. Later on, where is it? In chapter 16? Abhayam sattva samshuddhir?
Yeah.
So, this is a very high priority in Krishna's view when he's describing what is knowledge. This is the second of those items. Sattva samshuddhi. What does it mean? Purifying your existence. Here, sattva doesn't mean sattva guna. Sattva means literally sattva, beingness. Sat means to be. And tva means, it's a suffix, N-E-S-S. So existence, we can say. And what kind of existence do we have to purify? Do you purify your spiritual existence? Is it? You have to purify your spiritual existence, it's already pure. You have to purify your mind, you have to purify your body. Because both of them have a very strong influence on you. This is humility. To be aware of this is humility. So as a mode of sattva samshuddhi, accepted in the service of Krishna, this is a priority. This is a reason that a person should make effort, and it's very clear that effort has to be expended here. Prayatna. Okay, so that's one thing, and Sridhar Swami says here, yara upari brahma paryantam. Going up, the highest you can go when you go up is Brahma Loka, because he's the engineer of the whole universe. Adha sthavara paryantam cha. And the lowest that you can go is not even a dog or a hog, but sthavara. What does sthavara mean?
Tree.
Yeah, immovable living entities. There are so many different kinds of living entities, they can't even move. When I was in college, I took a biology class, and they taught us about one class of living entity that they call a nerve net. Nerve net. It's a single-celled organism. There's only, all it can do is feel. It can't do anything. Cannot see, cannot speak, cannot... That's really time out. You've got to be... I mean, you know, you've got to be really nonsense to be put into that kind of solitary confinement. Really, think about it. This is why when a person is not judicious about what to do and what not to do, he's given a prison sentence that is corresponding. With the really bad ones, they're sent into maximum security prisons, and when they misbehave even there, then they put into solitary confinement. So that's like the nerve nets. They can't see anything, they can't move, they can't interact, they can't communicate, they cannot do a thing except be. That's the lowest that I've heard of. So this is sthavara paryantam cha, Sridhar Swami says. And most of us are somewhere in between. Brahmabhir jivaya nalabhyate. We're wandering. You don't stay a nerve net forever. You don't remain Brahma forever. Do you remember when you were Brahma?
No.
No? Isn't the Brihadaranya Upanishad, I think it is, he says, the Vamadeva Rishi. He said, oh my God, he had this realization one day. I used to be the sun. Once I was Manu. And look at us now. Confirmed. Tattu vishaya sukham anyatha prachina karmata eva sarvatra naraka shuraka shukara janmaldavati labhyate dukha. So in the same way, whether you're in hell, or whether you're a pig, or whether you take birth in whatever circumstance, you're going to get your happiness. And in the same way, you're going to get dukkha as well. Yatha dukkham prayatnam yati labhyate. Just as misery comes without trying for it. We mentioned in the beginning, nobody tries to get misery. So nothing, none of your endeavors can have any fruit, actually, unless you are blessed by fate. This is the point. And he gives the example, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he says, even a prince means the son of the king, you can, all facility you have, he cannot eat unless it's fated. Why? Well, maybe you get into an argument and you get so angry that you say, I'm not going to eat anything. You see, this happens. Achintita, one of this verse I quoted, aprarthitani dukhani, unprayed for miseries. Another reading of the same verse is achintitani dukhani, things that you could not have forethought, you could not see that it would happen like this. It always turns out different than you expect. Life is like that. Anybody who is more than 4 decades old, you know this. The problem is that you make all your life-changing decisions when you're only 1 or 2 or 3 decades old. So you can't see. That's why we listen to the elder people. Without elders, there's no such thing as a sabha, Dharma Shastra says. There's no such thing as a learned assembly without elders. So, what was I saying? Achintitani dukhani. You get these... You cannot foresee how it will happen. Or maybe you get a fever and you can't eat. Plenty of foodstuffs there, but you can't eat. They gave me a bunch of milk sweets this morning. I can't eat. The doctor said, no, I can't do it. Karma. Likhitam abhilalate pranstam kaha samartha. Whatever is written on your forehead, you cannot overstep that. You're going to be bound like that. It is... inexorable, Prabhupada uses this word. You know what it means? Inexorable. You cannot transgress present. Yeah, there's a word for it. It's sensitive. I don't remember now. Okay, so that's one thing. Jiva Goswami says, Karmana yortha apte sapunar arthabhasa evas nardhamiti bhava. The idea here is that so-called artha, artha means facility or progress, we say, pragati. This is considered to be a favorable thing. Is that it's actually not favorable. At best, it's a shadow of favorability because it's only temporary. The idea is that it's really not any benefit. Talabhyateti tasmad aihikartham sudaram karma nakartavyaviti bhava. The idea is that do not waste your time trying for things that are going to fulfill your desire, but not your real self-interest. This is the point. People go to astrologers, or sometimes they go to tantrics also. They get some sort of jadu, no? Vashikaran mantra, or something like this. So then, their idea is that I'm going to fulfill my desires. And a smart pundit who sees any glimmer of consciousness within his client, He will tell him honestly, look, this is going to fulfill your desire, but you have to think very carefully whether it's really going to satisfy you. And there's a story about this in Greek mythology, I think it is King Midas, you know this story? Or the same idea we have that Sanatana Goswami had a touchstone. Whatever you touch with the touchstone turns into gold. Is that what you really want? Midas, King Midas, this was the Greek conversion. And anything that he touched, it would turn to gold. So he picks up his chapati. He cannot digest gold. You see? So it's not necessarily. Somebody told me, Devamrita Goswami said, Steve Jobs, you all know a person named Steve Jobs. He said, don't worry about what your clients want. You give them what they need. Now, his concept was, I'm sure, perverted, but the point is that there's a difference between needs and wants. There's a difference. So what we want is called kama, or it's called kriyas, and what we need instead, that is called vastavmanartha, real self-interest, karmartha, you can say, or kriyas. Srimad Bhagavatam and all other Vedic literature emphasizes the importance of that thing. So, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he raises another interesting point. He says, just as the Shrutis, they emphasize happiness that is attainable in Swarga through adrishta. Adrishta, what does that mean?
Unseen.
Yeah, something unseen. In other words, daiva. You cannot see the result of what you've done, but it's there. Therefore, they call it adrishta. And it may be there for a long, long time. Jiva Goswami said, prachina karma, from many, many, many thousands and thousands of kalpas even, it may be sitting there before you get the bhoga avasara, the occasion to actually eat that result. So just as the Vedas enjoin that through this adrishta, you can eventually attain sarga and other things. Tatha kreshi vanid jyadayo dushte chasukhe. You get dushta sukha. What does dushta sukha mean? Worldly enjoyment. And who is encouraging that? Not the Vedas. He says here, kreshi vanidya. The business community. The business community is encouraging this. We were having a discussion about this the other day. I don't remember where it was now. When you travel to so many cities as I'm going, it all becomes a blur. Satisfaction. The very last thing that the business community wants is for you to be satisfied. Isn't that right?
Yes.
It's an antithetical value for them. They have to create agitation in the mind and then step into be your would-be savior. So, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur has some keen insights into this thing. It seems as if since his time, things have not changed very much. Tatha krishivani jyadayo dushte cha sukhe janan parvartante. They will engage you in dushta happiness, worldly happiness also. Either way, the principle is here that tat sukha anapeksha svadharmam tyaktva katham bhaktau janat parvartitam. He's raising the doubt that someone may have. You mean you want me to give up all this and just worship Bhagavan? What will happen? How will my kids get into the best school? How will we eat? What will we do? So therefore he says, this verse is spoken. Satyam, it's true. You have to do something. Kovidastu naiva taihi prataritaha syat. But the person who's smart, Kovida, we've already described Kovida. This person is not pratarita. Pratarita is not a very common word. Anybody know what it means? It means cheated. The intelligent person is not. It means a few things. It means to be seduced, it means to be persuaded, it means to be beguiled or deceived or misled somehow. You see, the Vedas are actually misleading us with all these temporary dreams of happiness because, frankly speaking, most of us want to be misled. Most of us, that is why we made this distinction. Aihikartham, Jiva Goswami told us. Things that you want as opposed to things that you really benefit from. Most people are ready to settle with things that they want. Once in Mauritius, I was talking to one Karmakandiya Pandit, and he was telling me, he was an honest man. He said, we know everything. He said, we know everything. We know that Krishna's God. We know that this Karmakanda stuff is a waste. We know everything. But we can't tell people this. If we tell people this, then what will happen to our livelihood? He was honest. So the Vedas are cheating us in this way. And Krishna says, he says in so many places in Bhagavad Gita, we should not be misled or pratarita. And here Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says, the devotee's not, or not even, what to speak of devotee, the COVID, anybody who's smart, he's not misled by these things. So therefore he's spoken this verse. Kovido viveti, he's a discriminating person. Tasyaiva heto prayateta prayatna kuryat. And then the rest of his commentary is the same. Also in Srihara Swami. Okay. Does anybody have any questions or any comments on anything that we've discussed so far?
Thank you so much for a wonderful class. So you were saying that one of the points is the purification of existence.
Mm.
when we perform activities. So one question I had, like sometimes we put into the more and like suppose activities, if we just take the work life, it's like so much work life, isn't it? That also is like a purification of existence happening if you are, and there are two situations. One situation you can just go cool down, you might not do more work and just do, and other thing is that you are really going top. A lot of like you are performing more work and getting more purified. So how to distinguish that which is purification, and the other situation might be that you are just going cool calm in your career and you're not getting exposed to the more material things.
Your insights into this matter are very keen, and evidently they're the fruit of long thought on the matter. I've spoken with many grahasthas, especially in India. I think it's harder to work in India than it is to work in America. Because they really complain like anything in India. But there are two approaches. What I've seen, I can't say about anybody here in Silicon Valley, but what I've seen in Infosys, for example, is that they tend to be slackers. They go to work at 10 o'clock, they clock in, then they go back to the temple and do some service, and then they come back to work and clock out. I've seen that they do like this. And the idea is that, you know, it's all a waste of time anyway. It's just, you know, let me do some sankirtan. And then, so, you know, I mean, there's some ideological justification for that approach. Or somebody just, you know, he can do better than he does, but he just, in order to read Prabhupada's books at work, he just, you know, does a simple job and he doesn't really endeavor. And if they relegate him to some desk job, he's happy with that. And that's something I've seen that devotees do. You're talking about purification of existence and how do we get purified, whether that approach will actually purify you or not. Because if the time is actually engaged in Krishna's service as a result of that approach, then you will be purified. But how much of the time, to what degree, what is the purity of that approach? That has to be very carefully scrutinized. On the other hand, there are those who give the work their all. The younger you are, the more likely you are to do this. I was like this at one point. You endeavor with maximum determination. You have great ambitions to fulfill. You have your plans. And you haven't yet realized that it's not going to turn out according to your plan. And the way that you get that realization that it doesn't work out according to your plan is that you get purified. You realize, I'm wasting all of my time. And it's never going to get anywhere because it's like a rat on a treadmill. Therefore, they call it the rat race. You're not going anywhere, Baba. You're just going around in circles. You see? That realization stings. It stings the intelligence. It's very painful to recognize that I've invested all this. Even there are so many verses that we have about this. One way or the other, you're going to come to the realization that it's a waste of time. And one way or the other, no matter how hard you work or don't work, you're going to get the same amount of success. And this is what we don't believe. We don't believe this. Zurur, we don't believe it. Bilkul. Am I right?
Yes.
Yes.
We don't believe this. This is the thing. This is a hard pill to swallow. That's why this verse is spoken, Sri Goswami is pointing out. Even if we're prepared to give up, and now everybody's prepared to give up Siddharma in order to get this bhoga, nobody thinks twice about the future. But Sri Goswami is only hinting here that there's another reason to perform Siddharma. And as we mentioned already, it's in Bhagavad Gita also. Srila Prabhupada has also mentioned many times. This Swadharma paradigm is actually very beneficial for your Krishna consciousness. We've quoted before. Yesham tuantagatam papam janam punya karmanam te hi dvandva moha nirmukta. Only those persons, Krishna says, who are fixed in piety now, and therefore, or thereby, I should say, free from past sinful reactions. Only those persons can sustain a mature commitment to Krishna consciousness. That is the real purpose. And that purpose cannot be obtained by wandering up to Brahmaloka or falling down to hell. It's only through Krishna consciousness that one can get that wonderful situation of, well, basically nishtha bhakti, or even bhava bhakti. What does Krishna say? Vita raga bhaya krodha, this is the natural consequence of being dvandva moha nirmukta. You all understand this term. Dvandva moha nirmukta, being freed from the bewilderment of duality. That is more or less synonymous, or at least it's closely related to the idea that one is freed from attachment, fear, and anger. Vita raga bhaya krodha. In that condition, when you take shelter of Krishna, manmaya mamu pashtaha, bahavo jnana tapasa bhuta. Many, many persons, Krishna says, in the past they have done this, and they become purified. And what happens when you're purified? Mad bhavam agataha. Then you finally get to, there's no more any obstruction. Nobody hears in biology, everybody hears in technology. But biologists know. What happens when you introduce a foreign species to a new environment, which is not native? Just like I was saying with Srinivas, Jagannath Srinivas. And across the street from his apartment, there's a duck pond. And in that duck pond, you have Canada geese. You all familiar with Canada geese? Anybody from Seattle knows what Canada geese are. They're not native to this park, but they moved in and they make themselves at home. Or in Los Angeles, we also have this, believe it or not. There are squadrons of wild green parrots flying throughout Los Angeles today, because somebody got the bright idea that they're going to release their pets into the wilds. And then they just start forming their own communities in the wild. And now parrots are a naturalized species in Los Angeles. They make a bunch of noise and the Canadians make other problems. You have to be careful where you step, if you know what I mean. So when you introduce a non-native species into a foreign environment, and there are no natural predators, then that species will expand and multiply and eventually take over. And it is like that with Krishna consciousness also. When we have anarchas, they will choke our creeper. Those things are extrinsic to the environment of our heart. But we've introduced them there by our own choice, and then it becomes a problem how to get rid of them. Anarchas. And conversely, when you practice Krishna consciousness such that the anarchas are destroyed, almost to nil. Almost to nil means? Who knows the verse?
Nashta trayishu avatreshu.
When the anarchas are almost gone, then there's nothing to impede your rapid progress in Krishna consciousness. The biologists call this a J-curve paradigm. You put some high rate of multiplication germ into a petri dish, let's say it multiplies by 50%, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, adi, adi, adi. Very quick, it looks like a J, it just shoots up. Krishna consciousness is like that. When we follow Dharma, and we become purified, and there's the obstructions to Krishna consciousness are removed, and the Krishna consciousness takes off like anything. This is the value of this, of not giving up your Swadharma. Okay, you had a question.
Thank you, Prabhupada, for the very nice picture. One of the things you mentioned about was astrologer. And many devotees actually get into this point of astrologers, and even Vastu and Jyotish and other kind of shastras to alleviate their problems. How much should devotees actually have faith, or should they even do it? Or please, if you can elaborate.
Srila Prabhupada did not encourage this kind of thing very much. And he just kind of, he didn't he didn't seem to be very responsive to it. He didn't really encourage it. And he gave the impression that he didn't take it very seriously also. That's something we should keep in mind. And we should also keep the context in which he behaved in that way in mind. He was dealing with people in whom he was trying to inculcate the very basic principles of Krishna conscious siddhanta. On the other hand, I can say from my own experience that it's been very helpful for me to learn a little bit about astrology, because when I was in Saturn period for 26 years, first I was in Saturn Mahataja, then Sarasvati. It came out back to back. 26 years of Saturn is no picnic. So, you know, it's very helpful to make sense of your psychophysical situation at any given point in time. It's kind of like a roadmap, one of my astrologer godbrothers told me. You know, it's not going to change your fate. It certainly cannot replace Krishna. You know, we don't take shelter of astrologers or astrology, because you can't really change anything, but at least you know what's happening. When you get into a car to go to Sacramento, I'm going to Sacramento this afternoon, then it's understood. You're going to have either a road map if you're an old person, or you're going to have a GPS. You need to know where you're going. You need to be able to gauge where you stand. This is the value. This is the value. When people come to me with problems, the first thing that has to be determined is this a temporary karmic problem, or is it an existential spiritual problem? You have to know the product of karma in order to do that. This is how I interpret Ishopanishad. Avidyam cha avidyam cha yash ityadi. We have to understand where we stand in this material world, and we also have to understand how things work in the spiritual world. Okay? Yes, Rasika. We're going to go back to France.
So, Prabhu, you were saying earlier that we have to endeavor for duty and for getting purified. But then you were also saying that sometimes people, we don't know what people in Infosys, right? Sometimes people, you know, don't do that much work, and they probably use the time to go to temple to do service or not. So I'm just wondering, what is the dharmic way to do? Mm-hmm. Because we have to go to work, say, to get money. So do we really have to work, or, I mean, as a matter of duty, or is it okay to use the time to do devotional activities and things like that? What is the correct thing?
I would encourage different people in different ways. Because you're asking the question, I'm going to give an answer that's appropriate for you. That is that you have to do whatever facilitates the service of your spiritual master to the maximum degree, whether it's ordinarily considered to be dharmic or not. Actually, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says that the root of all cheating is dharma. Here in America, people cheat you because they're adharmic. In India, people cheat you because they're dharmic. It's kind of hard to explain that without experience, unless you've experienced it. But in general, I would encourage, to a general audience, I would encourage you work honestly and do the best job that you can, because that purifies the heart. Yajna dana tapascheva. It is tapo, but it is not the bodhidyam. This is the point. It's mundane tapas. To go to work every day is tapas. To negotiate the freeways here is tapas. To deal with office politics is tapas.
Yes.
But it is not the bodhidyam. And this is the point that should sting the intelligence. Mm. We should come to the realization at some point, I am wasting my time. Pariksya lokan karma chitan brahmano nirvedam ayam nasya krita kritena. A Brahmana, a broad-minded person, he surveys all possible avenues of human life and considers, wait a minute, there's nothing here that's not karma. It's either my karma or somebody else's karma or a combination of both, and we know that karma is it's flimsy, as Prabhupada said here, flimsy. It lasts only for a little while and then it's gone, and well, what is it? There's no substance here. Second half of the verse. This is from Mundaka Upanishad. Having surveyed all possible avenues of life and come to this conclusion, one should be disgusted. I'm wasting my time. Once you come to this sense of detachment, then he can say, Tad Vikyana Artham Saguru Mevabhigache Samitani Shrotri Brahmanishnam. At that point, one is a qualified candidate to approach a spiritual master because he will be an open book. Until that time, when as long as we've got our own agendas and attachments, you can't hear. Even if you go to the booth, you can't hear. So that's why I said, we give different advice for different persons. If a person is, you know, too much stuck in that ambition paradigm, you have to encourage them to burn out. And they will burn out. Because of their honest over-endeavor, they will burn out. And it's good for them. It should be so. But if a person has actually already come to the conclusion that it's all a waste of time and Krishna consciousness is the only thing that matters, then you devote 100% of your energy to that, without consideration of any external paradigms or preconditions. Is that okay? All right. Shrata Devi.
So I have two questions. The first is that when people fall down from the spiritual planets, do they always start as...
When they fall down from?
From the spiritual world.
Right.
Do they always start as Rama, or they can start in these places?
My understanding is that everyone's first birth in the material world is Rama. Because it's like a slap on the wrist. You know, it's not hardcore punishment. I mean, if you go from being in the spiritual world to becoming an earth net, that's a pretty big fall. But if you're given some respect and you're given some facility and the disease is fairly light at that point. You know, we can become more and more and more covered. But generally people do. This is the point. They don't often go back to Godhead. But from Brahma's position, it is easier to go back to Godhead because he's got maximum piety, maximum facility. If you perfectly perform Varnashram Dharma for 100 births, then you can take birth as Brahma. This is the qualification. Perfectly. Think, what does it mean perfectly? Unfailing in your duty. Who is unfailing in his duty? Surya. Never is he late. Not once. This is the we can learn if we're sensitive and thoughtful. Not once does he come late. Not one inch over what is supposed to come does the tide roll in the Pacific Ocean. Yesterday we were seeing at Jagannath's house there are some squirrels that eat on his back porch. And she said that if we give them dosha, they don't want to eat it. They only want nuts. So I said, yes, this is because he's following his dharma. It's proper for him to eat these kinds of things. That's why they like it. They'll fight for the nuts, but none of them will touch the dosa. So everybody follows their dharma in this world, except for the humans. Because human life is a junction. Mahat sevam dvaram ahur vipte tamo dvaram yoshitam sanyam. On hand, you can go for sense gratification, you're going down to hell. That is the path. On the other hand, if you go for the satsanga, then you're going up. So Brahma's given this facility in the beginning. It's lenient punishment. And if he sees his mistake and goes back, then not all the time is Brahma a pure devotee, because there are so many Brahmas, so many Brahmandas. Sometimes our particular Brahma, we're very fortunate, he's the head of our sampradaya. He's a pure devotee. Look at Brahma Samhita. All of our philosophy is based on Brahma Samhita. These are his realizations. We're so fortunate. Okay?
And my second question was about the karmic reactions. So we read in Brahma Samhita that through devotional service all the karmic reactions get burned down. But then I also hear that people say that some of the karmas you can, karmic reactions you can dissolve and some even Krishna can't dissolve. So can you elaborate a little bit?
This is another perennial question. It's a very good question also. Karmani nirdahati. He burns up all the karmic reactions. All of them?
Yes.
All of them?
No.
No. Not all of them. Some pratha of the karma. What is it that keeps you in this material body? Only pratha of the karma. If all the pratha of the karma is erased, then your body is also erased. And then you've got no facility. So some degree he burns up. How much? That's up to him. Time, place, and circumstance. He uses his own discretion. Sometimes he lets the karma come through. Sometimes he destroys the karma, depending on what he sees is favorable for our Krishna consciousness. So, that's the way it is. Another thing is that we see, the closely related question I get a lot is that people say, well, if the karma is all destroyed, or even mostly destroyed, then why is it that we see devotees also suffer? Devotees even suffer. So what, is that karma or is it Krishna or what is going on? So Jiva Goswami describes about this, assuming that it's karma. Jiva Goswami says, if we stack up 100 pan leaves and take a long needle and push it through that stack, you know those needles you get in India, they make the garlands. So you push it through, it goes through immediately, yes? No. It goes through the 100th leaf, then the 99th leaf, then the 98th leaf, then the 97th leaf, adi, 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 adi. So in the same way, we get our karmic reactions, and our karmic reactions are immediately destroyed, but it's immediate in the scope of eternal time, not in the scope of our conditional concept of time. Every species has its own concept of time. Every level of existence has its own scope of time. And Svargaloka time is totally different than it is here. You see? So to us, it looks like it's taking forever to get over these karmic reactions. But actually, it's happening very quickly. But it's not instantaneous, this is the point. Okay, that's one thing. Now another thing is that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments regarding Priyavrata Maharaj. What was his story, Priyavrata Maharaj?
He was trying to do devotion service.
He only wanted to do bhakti, he was having this problem. He only wants to do bhakti, and he doesn't want to get in all this worldly stuff. Right? But he was born as a Prajapati. And that means that there's very heavy expectations from the parents and the family that when you're going to get married, when you're going to, the children, So, what did he do? He tried to fight it. He gave all the arguments, and his arguments were correct, not wrong arguments. Fear be, they didn't want him to do this, they wanted him to do that. So they had to go and enlist, who was it? Naradmuni, Swayambhuva Manu?
Brahma.
And they all came back and they were preaching to Priyavrata Maharaj. Finally, he gave all the I don't want to get married because I'm afraid that if I get married, I'll get attached. And Brahma said, no, don't worry, just follow your dharma. So he got married and he was responsible. He wasn't slacking. He was making his best effort. And he got attached. He got attached in the end. When it was time to give up, he was like Indra. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he raises this point about this. He says, why does a person like this suffer? He's doing the right thing for the right person for the right reason. Faith. When it's on your forehead to suffer, even the right person is giving you the right instruction and you're following for the right reason, still you have to suffer because it's just meant to be. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says there are three reasons that devotees suffer. Number one reason, most likely reason, offenses. He committed some offense, and as a reaction for that, he has to suffer. A second reason is that the person may have the karma that was not burned up, as we've already described. And the third reason is the really scary one. The third reason is that Krishna or Krishna's devotees might want you to suffer for some reason that only they know. We were discussing this the other night, that like demigods, It's well documented that when a person makes too much spiritual advancement, the demagogues get nervous because they know. Even if he doesn't go back to Godhead, he's going to go to Svargaloka. And who's in charge of Svargaloka? I'm in charge of Svargaloka. This person comes into Svargaloka, then what happens? He might take over my position. So that's another thing. Does this answer your question? Okay. All right. We're going now from back to front. You had a question, Gandharva.
I think you covered this role, but I still want to ask, because even though you say that spiritual life is tapodivyam, but still
spiritual life is
Is the real tapodivyam, not just tapas. But still, even Krishna conscious movement doesn't move without money, right? So even within a movement, we see how much money is important. And I was talking to the other person, he says that there are so many devotees who have so many big plans, but they can't execute without money. So only people who work in the corporate or whatever you say, Vaishya, they support. So how can we say that, like as you were saying, this is all, it doesn't purify, because it contradicts, because it seems like only if you do, you can sustain or your progress is measured like that. But it's completely different, but that percentage is very less, as we see it.
Tarago pratishtha shruti yogadhinna, I quoted the other day. Mahajana yenika dasapanta, whatever the spiritual master says, that is the priority. Everything galvanizes around that. Like in Nityananda Swami, he can speak, but he needs a stage. So somebody has to provide that stage for him. You see? This is the person who's working hard for that purpose. There's no problem at all. That is also transcendental. It's just like this. We say that grihastha brahmachari. No. That person whose only purpose is to sustain dharma within the household, that person is also considered to be a brahmachari. This is Sridhar Swami. This definition comes from Sridhar Swami. So, yeah, it's true. And the other day I also mentioned this. We say, Anyapilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadhyanakatam Anukulyana Krishnana Shivanam Bhakti Rakama. Bhakti is devoid of karma and devoid of jnana. Your doubt is that, well, wait a minute, I see a lot of need for karma and jnana, and that's true. Because bhakti is at the same time consists of nothing but karma and jnana. But once it becomes bhakti, then it becomes transcendental divya karma, divya jnana. It's not to be combined. It looks like ordinary calm chilling tense man. But ihayasya hare dasi karmana manasa vacha nikalashvatya vasthasu jivanukta suchite. That person has to be considered jivanukta. Then he looks like a calm chilling tense man. Tamal Krishna Maharaj in Mumbai, at one point there was a court case and he came to Srila Prabhupada. He was so busy with his court case, he hadn't read Prabhupada's books for a long time. He was in anxiety. He said, Srila Prabhupada, I haven't read your books for 6 months, but I practically memorized all the Mumbai municipal codes all the way back to 1936. So tell me what to do about this. And Prabhupada told him, Prabhupada cut him no slack on it, because he knew that this person had surrendered. He said, sleep less. Prabhupada pushed on it, kept pushing. So our gurus, they have the empathy. Guru means empathy. Atmaupamyena sarvatra savambhasyati arjuna tyadi. The gurus have the empathy to know where we stand and to know what instruction to give us. So all we have to do is follow. That's all. And we should follow in full faith. Even if we happen to be working outside, that's fine. If we are guided by the guru and it's pakka, everything is very clear, then you should have koi nishchayna hiyona. There should be no doubt. Okay? All right, in the back. A long time you've been waiting.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. My question is regarding living in the West. In Chaitanya Charitamrita and many places in our Shastras, it is said that the further you go in the West, you know, the more sinful activities people perform. And, you know, and our Shastras also say, you know, the Western countries are not good for, you know, spiritual realization and, you know, progress in spiritual life. My question is, you know, after living here for almost like 20 years now, sometimes I wonder, you know, I'm really making any tangible progress in spiritual life. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like, you know, I'm just wasting my time living in this part of the world. So, you know, sometimes I feel I should, you know, utilize my rest of the life properly and, you know, make good spiritual progress. And this may even, one of the things that I'm seriously thinking is maybe I should move back to Bharat Bhumi, you know, where, you know, we can make some good tangible spiritual progress.
What they can ask called Bharat Bhumi, not a half. This is the problem. It's not India anymore. I don't even set foot in Delhi anymore. Just it's too painful. I know what you're feeling. I also was in the same boat 20 years ago. That's why I moved to Vrindavan. But outside of that, I mean, it's actually worse than the Bay Area in some ways. I have to say. So many times worse in so many ways. So, you know, nothing is static in this world. Everything is constantly changing. It's, you know, we have to, what did they say? We have to be the change that you want to see. You have to manifest this level of piety. I had a dream last night. I dreamed that I was in a place, it looked like India, temples everywhere and people everywhere, it looked like India, but it was in America. And so, you know, it can happen, but what is the difference? Only the consciousness. You change the consciousness, and you change the your own consciousness first. Janmasar hakari, kora parupakar. Then you change the consciousness of all those around you, and then you will change this place. Already, we've seen some of the great saints, they're taking birth all over the world now. Because their parents have laid the social groundwork for that to happen. The social and psychological, psycho-spiritual groundwork has been laid by Srila Prabhupada's divine grace. And they're able to produce very high caliber saintly children as Vaishnavas. And we, on the other hand, we see in India, even in the families of the caste Goswamis, they're giving birth to demons. Because they're neglecting. In many cases, they're neglecting. So many criminals have the surname Sharma. It's true. So, you know, whether you're here or there, the point is sadhu sangha, satsangha. That is the thing that changes everything. India is no longer India. From 20 years ago, it was a different country than it is now. And it's fearsome how that is getting. How fast it's moving in the wrong direction. It's a funny thing. Within the last few years, I've seen it. As India becomes technologically comparable to America, America becomes comparable to India ethically. It's like they nourish each other's worse than our does or something. like a bad marriage. You see sometimes people that you know they each of them nourishes the wrong qualities in the other one. So, you know, this is the problem when you have Shreyas or when you have Preyas as the goal of life, and it doesn't matter whether you're here or there, it just doesn't make a difference. You got to take up this spiritual life through satsangha. Is that, I don't know if that's helpful. Okay, likes it. Two thumbs up. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the wonderful lecture. I have a question on Swadharma. So, traditionally, when people identify the varna for a person, so they identify through the word. But other than that, I don't see a reliable method of identifying a particular person's varna. That's one thing.
Reliable, you mean objective.
Right.
Okay.
And the other question on that topic is that sometimes it becomes very difficult to even follow the rules and regulations given for the sadharma rather than following.
Sometimes.
Most of the times, rather than following the devotional service, like chanting and hearing Bhagavatam and things like that. So how can we take advantage of Swadharma?
Okay, let's take these questions one at a time. The first question about jati dharma, when varna based on jati, you said that that's an objective indicator of one's varna, because otherwise we disagree. Somebody says he's peaceful, somebody else says he's not peaceful, right? There's truth in that. And I sense that the very best motivation for that system to come into place was probably something like this. It should be in a perfect system in which we have, what is that verse? Karma na vaidanekaneya janto dehu pukatiye. If in fact fate is organizing and putting everybody exactly where he needs to be, then it should be so, that the Brahmins are taking birth from Brahmin families. Theory, we find at the same time that devotees like Prahlad are coming, even born from a demon father. And in fact, we find we most of the examples that are given for us in our shastras are dealing with extreme exceptions to the rule. Javali Muni is another one. Nara Muni is another one. Vidura is another one. You see? Veena. Yeah. Shringi. Bad Brahmins. So, you know, we can't go only on the basis of birth, but it's not a bad yardstick. But I think Prabhupada is pushing heavily on this idea that, you know, varna by jati is the thing, because people have so much ingrained in that mode of assumption that it's based on birth. But actually birth should be an indicator, and it generally is. But it cannot be taken as absolute, and it cannot even be taken as objective, because there are so many exceptions in the shastras. So we have to give it a grain of salt at the same time. Okay, the second question again. Is that okay, first of all?
Yes, sir. The second question is that the rules and regulations for the Sardar are more difficult to follow than following the principles of bhakti.
Yeah, this is such an important point. I don't know that I would agree that they're more difficult. It depends on our conditioning. But following anything is difficult in Kali Yuga. And for that reason, we should work with our working principle should be that we have to do our duty in this world, but we have to always remain conscious of the fact that we cannot do our duty perfectly. And Krishna covers this in Bhagavad Gita when he says that every sort of endeavor is covered by some flaw also. And you know, people say, well, you know, we can't follow these things in Kali Yuga, but we can't follow anything in Kali Yuga. What difference does it make? The point is that we, for the purpose of upholding the time-honored system and the instructions of the spiritual master, we make our best effort, but we don't ever fall into the illusion that our advancement is based on this. Because it isn't. It's ultimately based on mercy. But how are you going to get mercy if you're neglecting the instructions of the spiritual master? Is that okay? Is it too oblique?
No, that helps. Thank you.
So, we can't follow even bhakti sadhanas perfectly either. We can't follow anything. People take initiation, they can't chant their rounds, they can't keep their vows, they can't do so many things. But we try. And when we're humble, then we succeed by divine grace. And that's the part that we should remember always. Only mercy. All mercy cases. Okay? You had raised your hand?
Thank you very much, Prabhupada. It's a lot of information and a lot of future realizations to have. When you are mentioning Dushta Sukha, something stuck. I was recently reading the quote from His Holiness Radha Swami Maharaj, where he says, when you are suffering pain, you know you are suffering. But when you are suffering pleasure, you are under the illusion that you are not. To be bereft of the soul's inherent spiritual nature and love within is actually a suffering state. So when you said Dushta Sukha, I was actually reflecting on this point, and I immediately remembered it.
Yeah, it's not entirely clear what he means. by Dushta Sukha. But one of the acceptable definitions of that word is, you know, we have a nice word for this in English, profane. Profane happiness generally means lokic, worldly kinds of, you know, vishaya sukha. So, in that sense, I'm taking Dushta Sukha. Otherwise, because it's coming from Vaishya, you have to assume that it's also lying. Lying propaganda, because Vaishya means liar. For you, I'm not making any profit. With this, nowadays, 20 years ago, no one ever would have dared, but now I've seen in North America, and within the last 10 years only, they have age-defying cream, ladies. If you just invest your money in this age-defying cream, you will reverse the process of total lie. Complete, unabashed, bald-faced, blatant lie. So, and because it's coming from the Krishis and the Vanajyadayas, he says here, Dushte Chasukhe. It's Dushta Sukha.
Thank you.
Evil happiness, you can say. Alright, is that okay?
I have one question actually. You were mentioning that Vedas mislead us into this temporary happiness, and also most people want to be cheated.
Yeah.
And we are trying to preach to those type of people, so who does not have the desire in the first place to be Krishna conscious. So what do we do on a practical level?
You humor people. You humor them. You get them to eat prasadam. You get them to chant Hare Krishna. You get them to take a book. Whatever it takes. And tell them whatever is required to get them engaged. That's what we have to do. And when a person is not honest, when a person is only looking for ways that he can exploit Krishna consciousness, that's all you can do, just engage. And don't underestimate the potency of this practice. I saw this happen with my own mother. She wasn't anything like a Hindu. She wasn't at all spiritual. She was the least interested in Krishna, although she was not offensive. She was respectful. But just because I engaged her for some 4 years in the last several years of her life, I was giving her prasadam every day. I took her to the temple. She met Indrajana Swami, Giriraj Swami, other devotees. She enjoyed the kirtan. She liked to hear the class. She got so much benefit. By the time she left this world, she was wearing Vaishnava tilak, kanti mala, tulsi leaf on her tongue. Last thing she ate was mahaprasadam. Among her last words were Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I'm sure she went up. So you engage people. It has to be assumed that people are only looking for what they can get from Krishna consciousness in the beginning. This is what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita as well. So, you know, sometimes you have to humor them a little bit. That's why I said that she asked a question. It depends on who's asking. Krishna consciousness, preaching Krishna consciousness, is not always about enlightenment. It's about inspiration. You have to get somebody enthused about actually doing something. This is the point. Prayateta. Prayatna. Prayatna kuryat, Sridhar Swami says. The person has to actually do something, has to endeavor somehow. Our job is to get people inspired somehow to chant Hare Krishna, somehow to read Prabhupada's books, somehow to take prasadam. If we can get them to do those things, what will our half an hour lecture do, Prabhupada said? You better give them a book, and if they read it, even one line. Lava matra. Even one split seconds association with a devotee. Okay? All right, anything else? Okay.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the amazing class. So, Prabhupada, I just had a question about purification in this material world. So, as we know, this world is for purifying us of a tendency to be an enjoyer. And the material energy very aptly purifies us by making us realize how we are insignificant.
She's very expert at that. That's why she's carrying the trident. The trident is meant for us. And she pokes us once in a while. But, you know, when we surrender to Krishna, then the same person who's poking us with a trident, she becomes Srimati Radharani, and she's blessing us with a lotus flower instead. Same material energy. heating and cooling system is the same to an engineer. You see, it all depends on what you want, which button you're going to switch. If you switch the Krishna button, then everything becomes benedictory. And if you switch the other button, then everything becomes suffering.
So, my question is, how should a devotee feel happy to be reminded about his or her insignificance, which is a natural position? Usually it's a humiliating experience, but how should we take it gratefully?
In this material world, everybody has to struggle, and everybody's overwhelmed by that struggle. Prabhupada, how many times have we read throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, the struggle for existence?
Yeah.
It's a stock phrase that appears any number of times in his books. What is that struggle? That struggle is just ourselves trying to swim against the stream. Everything is flowing down towards degradation, and we're trying to swim upstream. That's very discouraging. That's very discouraging. And we realize our insignificance, and that no matter what we do, we fail. Especially if we're in the lower modes. And it's quite discouraging. But we can take shelter of our insignificance in the sense that when we take shelter of Krishna, then our insignificance becomes our greatest advantage, because Krishna is called Bhakta-Vatsalya. He loves his devotees. Vatsalya, what does Vatsalya mean?
Huh?
What kind of affection? What does maternal affection mean? Look at the etymology of the word. Vatsalya is derivative from? Vatsa. Who is Vatsa? A baby cow. Baby calf. So Krishna has this maternal or paternal love for his devotees. Not Krishna. Srimati Radharani. Vidakta Sindhu. She's an ocean of expertise. Vidakta Sindhu. Anuragara Saika Sindhu. She is an incomparable ocean of affection and attachment for Krishna. Vatsalya Sindhu. She's called the ocean of Vatsalya, the ocean of maternal love. When a mother has a child who is the most weak, the most dependent, the most helpless, her attention goes especially to that one. This is how we can get inspiration from our insignificance. If we call out to Srimati Radharani for her help and we take her help, then we're actually in a more advantageous position than anyone else. Because if we try to act on our own, according to our own karmic, temporary karmic abilities, then Krishna sees us and says, okay, he's okay with what he's got. He's not helpless. He's not vivash. Apanna samsritim ghoram. What is that? Yannama vivashogranam. When a person calls out the name helplessly, vivash. Vivash means, see, I'm completely overwhelmed and helpless. When we call out like that, then the Lord becomes our Savior very quickly. We cannot ignore it. Like a child crying for the mother cannot, it breaks the mother's heart. She cannot ignore that. So, Vatsalya Sindhu. Atisandra Kripaika Sindhu. She is the unique ocean of the most intense, concentrated compassion is the Srimati Radharani. Lavanya Sindhu Namartachari Rupa Sindhu. She's the ocean of charm, she's the ocean of beauty. Sri Radhike Spiritome Hridiki Sindhu. Dear Radhika, please reveal the ocean of your pastimes within my heart. You can pray like this. This is Prabodhananda Saraswati prays. So, we are insignificant, but Krishna is most significant, and Srimati Radhani is intensified, highly concentrated mercy. We're in the most fortunate condition. We have the greatest advantage. Nobody else has any. No competition here. The more fallen we are, the more we deserve this help. But it requires that we park our ego. That's the main problem. we want to hold on to our egos, and it doesn't work. So as long as we're prepared to toss our ego out the window, then we have infinite support. Nothing is impossible. Look at Srila Prabhupada's example. Against all obstacles, he was successful. Gauri Kishore Das Babaji, when he left this world, nobody knew who he was. Now he's world famous. Who can understand how faith works? Who can understand what Krishna's plan is? Did he have any idea about his son? But now he's in every temple all over the world. People are taking shelter. It's inconceivable how the Lord works. Okay, is that all right? I think it's time to end now. No more questions. And thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Let's please open the Dutta Prabhu ki.
Jai! 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 Jai!